Well, thank you, Brother Allen. That was a very, very good presentation, very well thought out, very well studied. We greatly appreciate your tackling of this subject. At this time, we'll open it up for questions or comments or perhaps a rebuttal. Perhaps there's some internal evidence that someone here has that they would like to share that Alan hasn't heard yet, perhaps. I don't know. We'll see. Again, as Alan stated before, we're not here to discuss the interpretation of Revelation, the book. We're simply talking about the date. We don't have time for that tonight, and I personally would like to go to bed before 3 a.m. So let's stick to the dating of the book of Revelation, and we'll leave the interpretation of Revelation for another moment. Matt Kudernow, first question.
Thank you, brother. As Austin stated, we want to be respectful of everyone's time, so I'm not going to lay out everything that I probably could say here, but I do think that you may have done a bit of a disservice to the early date argument and some of the best internal evidence. So I'll ask you a question regarding some of the things said in chapter 1 and in chapter 22. There are phrases such as in chapter 22, "Behold, I'm coming quickly." Thrice that's said. In chapter 1, you have phrases such as "the time is near, time is at hand," "I'm coming quickly," these things that are now and are to come. And anytime these phrases are used anywhere else in the New Testament, we never question the speed at which they're going to happen. They all happen within a very short period of time, typically within about 3 years. Any other times those phrases are used in the New Testament. Yet we question them now because we have a different interpretation of what the book of Revelation means. And secondly, there's it's Revelation 1:7 says, "Everyone is going to see the Lord coming, including those who pierced him." Now the argument, of course, well, the Romans pierced him. But that's not what the New Testament writers say about who is responsible for the death of Jesus. Peter on Pentecost, Stephen in his speech, and even the Apostle Paul all make it very clear that the Jews are the ones responsible for the death of Jesus. And when someone takes the position that there's an early date here, they're using this sort of language to say, not only is this punishment strictly, or not strictly, but mostly against the Jewish people, but when we see that this language of "this is going to happen very soon, I'm coming quickly at the beginning and at the end," that why are we spanning this over thousands of years when the rest of the New Testament does not do that?
Well, first of all, I think that most people who take a late date would respond to the first part of chapter 1 where you're talking about in verse 7, "Behold, he is coming with clouds, every eye will see him, even they who pierced him, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn because of him, and I come quickly," and so on, would say that, yes, the fulfillment of the prophecies of this book begin to happen quickly or soon, but not necessarily within 1 year. And as far as the passage in Revelation 22, I think most of the late date defendants would say that this is a prayer of John about the coming of Jesus, and all Christians should desire the coming of Jesus quickly. However, I believe that the persecution that is discussed in Revelation is much broader than either Jewish persecutions, which were intermittent and sporadic, or the Neroan persecution, which was limited to the city of Rome. This is talking about a persecution against Christians that throughout the world. And that's the answers that I would give you. I don't pretend to be able to say that what I have said is going to erase the fact that there are early date advocates. And you're right. Now, I haven't dealt with all of the arguments, either internal arguments for the late date or all the arguments made in favor of the early date. But I already took 48 minutes.
Mark Shaw.
All right, Alan, I'll pile on with Matt.
That's fine.
And I'll just say I appreciate it. I thought it was great, and it's a good presentation of the late date. And I'm not an early date person. I don't think it matters for interpretation of Revelation myself, for my position anyway. It's a little bit like AK said earlier about the word Ionios. We have enough evidence without the dating to, you know, state what the meaning of Revelation is. But here's my question for you. In Revelation 3, in the letter written to the church at Philadelphia, and you use this to support your idea of imperial persecution, because he says that there is a persecution that is coming upon the whole earth. But in verse 9, he says, the context is the synagogue of Satan, they who say they are Jews and are not. And he says that, I will keep you from this persecution that's coming, this hour of trial, which is coming upon the whole earth. And he mentions that these Jews will come and worship at your feet after this hour of trial, or because of this hour of trial. In other words, the suggestion is that the Jews who are the persecutors, because he identifies them, they're Jews, they're ethnic Jews in this city of Philadelphia, because of this hour of trial, which has language that's very Matthew-like. Matthew talks about how the destruction of Jerusalem in Matthew 24 is coming upon the whole earth, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn because of the destruction of Jerusalem. So, again, I'm not saying I'm pre-70, but this looks a lot to me like very solid evidence, internal evidence, that this persecution is the destruction of Jerusalem. And we know that when the destruction of Jerusalem happened, the Romans fought back against Jews everywhere. In Alexandria, there were 50,000 Jews killed by the Romans. They took it very seriously. The average person rose up, the Romans rose up out of their chairs, went into the Jewish areas and killed Jews. And so, and that happened worldwide. And it probably happened in Asia Minor as well, because the Romans were angry. And so the way I see this is that he's saying the Jews are persecuting you now, pre-AD 70, but I will keep you from the fiery trial, the destruction of Jerusalem, this conflagration that's occurring, and then Jews will be converted to the church, and they will come and worship at your feet, which is probably just meaning they will become Christians and they will become part of the church. What's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is virtually the same as what I said to Matt, and that is, I think the persecution that is addressed throughout the book of Revelation is much more broad than the Neroan persecution, and way more broad than any Jewish persecutions of the church. The Jews did persecute the church, but they were fairly limited in what they could do because they were under Roman authority. And Nero's persecution really was not intended as a persecution against the church in terms of the worldwide body of people who were Christians. Nero set fire, or had it done, had fire set to the city of Rome. About a third of the city burned, I think. And Nero was under heavy pressure from the Senate and anyway, the legislative branch, and for setting this fire. And Nero was looking for a scapegoat, and he blamed the Christians. But his persecution of Christians was limited to the city of Rome. So, and I think the persecution throughout the book of Revelation is much more broad than just what Jews might bring against Christians and what Nero brought against the Christians. And then I would say, in addition to that, all of the external evidence that we have is in favor of the late date.
Right.
And
that you presented that very well.
Yeah, and the only effort at internal evidence was based upon misinformation. That's the most kind thing you can say about it.
Right. I just think it's interesting that in two of the letters, the synagogue of Satan is mentioned. And so to me, that suggests we just have an internal biblical, because you're using external sources to say that Jewish persecution wasn't great. My argument would be is that we have two internal scriptural sources that show that the Jews were after the Christians locally. And the way they did that is they were the rich individuals on the city councils, and they would go to the city councils and say, kill Antipas, kill these individuals. We want you to do this. And so the persecution is being instigated by these influential, rich individuals. And so I think it was a very serious person. And they followed Paul everywhere, obviously, we know. They chased Paul across the world trying to kill him on his missionary journey.
Well, I think that both sides in this argument they make a number of arguments based upon what they think is internal evidence for their position. I think, first of all, the external evidence is extremely powerful. I think the internal evidence for the late date, at least it appears to me that it's much stronger than the internal evidence for the early date. I think those three arguments that I mentioned are the main ones that you'll find in most early date proponents, and I don't think that they hold much water. But anyway, I would say this. I don't think that when the book was written, that is the early date or the late date, I don't think that that is critical to understanding the book, provided that you're not taking the early date for the purpose of establishing the destruction of Jerusalem and going on to some sort of AD 70 theory. So a person could hold an early date view and believe in one of the typical interpretation systems of the book of Revelation. I imagine yours is the continuous historical view. And one could take that view and still take the early date. There wouldn't be a problem with that necessarily. I don't think there would be any serious problem with it. But most early date advocates, virtually all of them, the writers on the early date, they have an agenda. And their agenda is to make this book solely about the destruction of Jerusalem. And then they start tying other passages to it, and they end up with the second coming of Jesus happening at the destruction of Jerusalem. And we've had this problem. I know that Bart would be opposed to this as much as I am, but we've had this problem even among our own people. A few of them have adopted this bizarre AD 70 theory of Max King. Max King was a preacher in northeastern Ohio in the 70s, I guess, 1970s. And he's the one that developed this AD 70 theory. It was unheard of before his time. And there have been a number of our own people who have been taken in by that. And that is a problem if you're setting the early date for that reason.
I really appreciated it. It was really helpful. One of the things you mentioned early on was that the late date was the main predominant understanding from the 2nd century to the 18th century, and then picked it back up, you said, around the 20th century, and the early date really hit steam in the 19th century. Can you explain the historical context of why that happened in that way?
Yes, virtually all of the 19th century writers who take the early date were graduates of Cambridge University. And I don't know the name of the professor, but there was some very influential professor. Now, these men are not nobody. I mean, they're well-known commentators and writers, and some of them are people that we might quote on other issues. Moses Stewart is one. I'd have to look back in my cards to who some of those others were. In fact, I think I can find them here. They're pretty well recognized. But anyway, this came out of Cambridge University in the 19th century. So B.F. Westcott, F.J.A. Hort, Westcott and Hort put together a text of the New Testament and are quite famous on commentators. J.B. Lightfoot, Moses Schaff, Philip Schaff, Moses Stewart, Philip Schaff, Robert Young of Young's Literal Translation. George Salmon believed this, but he gave this view up. And Milton Terry of Biblical Hermeneutics, Adam Clark, Alfred Edersheim, A.T. Robertson. I don't want to completely overthrow these men. These are pretty renowned interpreters. But I think they had a common source of this interpretation, and it was Cambridge University.
I'm going to ask a question real quick.
Sure. You're running the show.
I suppose I can present, give myself that privilege. When it comes to Irenaeus in particular, from what research I did, I kind of come to the conclusion or the understanding, perhaps, maybe faulty, but many of the church fathers kind of, they either agree or parrot what Irenaeus said.
That's true.
With Irenaeus, I believe it was in Foy Wallace, I read after him just a little bit, because I've heard the later date side of things, but I think he made the reference that Irenaeus perhaps wasn't the most reliable of person. One of the examples he gave was that Irenaeus said that Jesus lived into his 40s. And perhaps that's true, perhaps that's not. I haven't read Irenaeus' works. So my question is, how reliable would you say Irenaeus' witness or testimony is?
Well, I would say he's more reliable than Foy Wallace by a long shot. Well, actually, of all the people I read, and I don't know how many books I read, but a number, no one questioned Irenaeus's integrity that I read after, which I'm not saying it isn't done, but I did read Foy Wallace. I don't remember him saying that, but he may have. The issue about Irenaeus is when he says, in most of the writers, he's talking about whether or not the Antichrist or the man 666 is named or not. And he says, it would have been announced by him who beheld the apocalyptic vision, for that, or it, was seen no very long time since, but almost in our day, towards the end of Domitian's reign. They would say it is he was seen, meaning John. But, and I think the verb that is used in the Greek phrase is indeterminate here. The pronoun, the third person pronoun of the verb could be either it or he. But the antecedent is the apocalyptic vision. You have to go back quite a ways to get to John as the antecedent, which would not be a normal way to interpret that. And the people who lived in and around the time of Irenaeus, they all cite him and agree with him. And he had a pretty close connection to John. He was a student of Polycarp who was an immediate student of John. And so I read Foy Wallace's material. In fact, I've got it right here. Now Foy Wallace was a great preacher from some standpoints. He did important work in exposing historic premillennialism for the errors that it had. I think he wrote a great book on the Holy Spirit for the most part, although there's a few things I don't think were right. His book, The Gospel for Today, and God's Prophetic Word, both of those are important works. But you need to be careful before you get too enamored with Foy Wallace, because he wrote The Christian and the Civil Government, and he does not agree with Billy Dickinson, I assure you. And Billy's the one that's right.
I wholeheartedly agree. I was reading after Foy just to kind of see the other side of the coin, if you will, and made some interesting arguments. One more question. One thing that he posed, just see what your rebuttal might be, was that proponents of the late date, that if you took that position, then that lent itself to premillennialism. As you said, he was very much did not agree with premillennialism, but he took it to that extent. What would be your rebuttal against that?
Well, I don't think a premillennialist would probably take the late date all right, but I don't think that's what brings about his premillennial viewpoint. Everybody, all of the views on Revelation, except the hyper-preterist view, the moderate preterist view that views the book of Revelation as being fulfilled at the fall of the Roman Empire, except for the telescope to the end, the continuous historical view that Barth takes, and many, many others, the recapitulationist view of S.L. Morris and Hendrickson and Don McCord and George Batty, also would take the late date. And, of course, the futurists, they all take the late date. So I don't think that's an issue in that. But I was going to comment. When I read Foy Wallace, it was interesting to me that the thing that seems to have tipped the balance for Wallace was the confusion over the continuous historical view. Wallace was troubled by the fact that in the continuous historical view, people search for all these fulfillments in Europe, and then it doesn't come to pass, and people have to reinterpret it in a few years or a few generations, and anything you have to keep doing that, he viewed as a problem. And that's why he latched on to the early date and the destruction of Jerusalem being the core of the book. And he doesn't say that in the words I just said it, but it's on page 6 and 7 of his introduction to the book of Revelation.
Have time maybe for one more question if it's out there. If not, let's conclude. Brother, do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
No, if you want to do some study of your own about this issue, a couple of books that I might recommend. I think Robert Harkrider in the Truth Commentary series, he has a 102-page introduction, and it's pretty even-handed and pretty good. And also, William Milligan, in his book, he's got 3 on Revelation. I think it's Lectures on the Apocalypse is the book. But William Milligan, he has an extensive discussion of the date of the book, and also Harkrider has a good investigation. If you want to read about the early date, Foy Wallace and Arthur Ogden are the people I suppose you would read. But anyway, I want to thank the congregation. I've enjoyed the study. I always do. And I appreciate the opportunity from the directors to be asked to speak on this topic.